Got blood and milk? I'm Joe Foljam.
You got your cheese in my maggots.
You got your maggots in my cheese.
I'm Kevin Leeson.
And I'm Torrin Atkinson. Hey, it's caustic soda.
Bam! Food. Delicious food.
And then delicious. Not so delicious.
No, it's all delicious.
Delicious to somebody? Is that's like everybody's all in the eye of the beholder? In the pit of the stomach?
Do you guys remember McDonaldland?
I do indeed.
Do you remember Mayor McCheese?
The mayor of McDonaldland?
That's our pinup for today, for the food episode of Caustic Soda.
I would eat him up.
Yum yum, lickety split.
Yeah.
Does he remind you of anyone? Because he's based off H.R. Puffin stuff.
Oh, oh, yeah, okay. I see it. I was about to say Torrin Atkinson.
Who was also... Thanks. I'm a huge cheeseburger for a head.
Or a huge head for a cheeseburger, one or the other.
And this is in 1971, I think. The ad agency for McDonald's had approached Sid and Marty Krofft, makers of H.R. Puffin and stuff, and Sigmund the Sea Monster and Land of the Lost, to license their characters for McDonald's. So I said, let's talk about this. And then, in the usual way, they didn't hear from him for a while. Then suddenly McDonaldland comes out with Grimace. And
Mayor McCheese
and the Fry Guys in this happy, wonderful land with lots of puppets and
the hamburger
and talking bushes and, yeah. And that kind of a stuff. Yeah.
Just dissimilar enough. Eh?
Actually, no. The Crofts were awarded $1 million when they sued them.
Probably a lot of money at the time, and McDonald's more than made that stuff back.
But they phased out the kind of magical place that the...
Well, slowly but surely. I mean, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
It was around for a long time.
And they introduced
time.
New guys. I remember when they introduced the Fry Guys.
Yeah.
And Birdie, the pilot. Right? She was a relatively late addition.
And I love this idea that the mascots are the creature that you're eating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have the McNugget guys or something like that as well.
Yeah, they were like little McNuggets. Yeah. They all kind of,
like,
they were like,
eat me.
Yeah, they were kind of like a chorus. Yeah, absolutely. And the hamburger would steal all the little burgers. I'm like, why didn't he just... kidnap Mayor McCheese, go for the top dog right out of the gate.
Yeah, the Hamburglar was like the only non-food person, and Ronald McDonald, right?
Yeah.
Because the Hamburglar wasn't a hamburger.
No, he liked hamburgers.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well,
yeah.
Who doesn't?
And what the hell was Grimace?
Grimace was I believe, a taste bud.
Oh, my God.
I know that he was originally called Evil Grimace.
Yes.
And he would...
You can YouTube that. I've seen that. Something. Yeah, I've seen McDonald's commercials. What was that?
Sorry.
Early...
Joe just farted.
He is a computer programmer, isn't he? His fart sounds like Windows Boink. Sound effects. The really, really early McDonald's ads are creepy as hell.
Yeah, for sure.
Really creepy. Like, everybody out there, YouTube, early McDonald's commercials, you wouldn't want your children going anywhere near the Ronald McDonald from those commercials, I assure you.
Let's talk about fermented shark.
Okay.
And this is a callback to both the Shark Attack episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the parasite episode, because we talked about that parasite that lives exclusively in the eye of the Greenland shark. If you live in Iceland, you may treat yourself to haukarl. Haukarl.
Okay.
H-A with a little thing over top of it. K-A-R-L. This is fermented shark.
Wow.
It is the Greenland or the basking shark. Now, the shark itself, poisonous when fresh, due to a high content of uric acid.
Oh, pee.
I think so.
Yeah, basically ammonia.
They should have called it the pea shark instead of the Greenland shark.
They should have. Mm-hmm. I agree. Let's write a letter.
Yeah.
Dear sirs, I am not a crackpot, but...
Dear shark namers, whoever you are...
So how do you prepare haukarl? Well, first you catch a Greenland shark. Then you gut it and behead it. Then you place it in a shallow hole dug in gravelly sand with the now clean cavity resting on a slight hill. You cover the shark with sand and gravel and stones placed on top. This is what they call pressing the shark. This presses the shark.
Yeah, right. Squeeze the pee out of it.
Well, yeah. So the fluids from the shark are pressed out of the body. Shark ferments for how long?
A year.
6 to 12 weeks.
Oh.
Depending on the season in this fashion. And then you cut the shark into strips, hang it to dry for how many months?
6 months.
Several.
Several.
Several months.
Several.
During this period, a brown crust will develop, which is removed prior to cutting the shark into small pieces and serving.
That brown crust is probably pea crust.
So even after all this, it's particularly ammonia-rich smell and fishy taste. It's an acquired taste, you might say. It's cut into cubes and served on toothpicks. Chef Anthony Bourdain. You all know him.
I do. He profiled Japa Dog here in Vancouver on his No Reservations show.
On No Reservations, he ate some and said it was the single worst, most disgusting and terrible tasting thing he has ever eaten.
How does this evolve? So what happens is you've got some very hungry people, right? And there's sharks, and they catch one, and they're like,
deadly.
There's meat here. Awesome. And they cook it, and they're like, oh my God.
Full of pee and poisonous.
Johan died.
How many sharks do you have to go through before you refine the process?
Like, Johan died. Oh, this is terrible. Okay, I got an idea. First, we're going to dig a hole. But it's got to be in sand, and then we're going to cover it with sand, and we're going to leave it for a long time, and then maybe it'll get better.
Well, this is kind of a callback to our poison episode, too, when we talked about the fugu fish, because this is the same sort of thing that I posited then. You know, the first guy that eats one of these things and croaks, like, 5 seconds later, I'm like, yeah, I can live without eating that fish.
Don't eat that part
of the fish. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's eat around the part of the fish that he just ate.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just keep carving it up until we find the spot that you can eat and not die.
The sweet, sweet spot.
It can't be that sweet, just like this Greenland fish. It's disgusting. Everybody agrees that it's an acquired taste at the very best.
Even after months of preparation and ridiculousness and fermenting of the meat, still terrible.
Yeah, what you're getting out of it is uric acid, essentially pee.
Yeah,
I think I can live without the pee shark, too. Fugu fish, pee shark, both on my not going there list.
How do you feel about maggot cheese?
It sounds delectable. Please elucidate.
You want to gross my wife out? Maggots.
Tell me more.
Oh, about cheese.
Maggot and cheese. Might turn her off cheese, and she loves cheese.
So this is from Sardinia, Italy, called Casu Marzu, which literally means rotten cheese in Sardinia.
Mm-hmm.
Cheese in
itself. It's kind of rotten.
It's pretty gross. I mean, it tastes delicious, but to think about it, you know, you're basically fermenting
it's a culture,
cow's milk.
Until it goes
or
bad.
Or goat's milk or whatever the kind of milk you're using. But Casu Marzu goes beyond the typical fermentation stage. Most people would consider decomposition. brought about by the digestive action of the larvae that is introduced into this cheese. These flies, sometimes called bacon flies or cheese skippers.
Ooh. Oh, bacon and cheese flies. Yeah. Well, now I'm interested.
Yeah, now all of a sudden we're talking.
Just give me the fly, man.
Skip the cheese altogether. I'll take me a fly.
So they basically introduce the maggots into this cheese where they begin to eat the cheese and break it down the cheese's fat. And the texture of the cheese becomes very soft and with some liquid, which they call lagrima.
So the maggots eat the cheese.
It's
maggot poop?
It processed, yeah.
The cheese that the humans end up eating is maggot poop.
I believe that's true.
Is this an acquired taste as well, or is this one actually delicious?
So lagrima, as I was going to say, is Sardinian for tears. So you got some tears seeping out of the cheese.
Okay.
The larvae are basically translucent white worms, about almost a centimeter long.
Uh-huh.
And by the time it's ready to eat, the typical Casu Marzu will contain thousands of these maggots. Now, some people eat them with the maggots. Some people don't like to eat the live maggots.
Right.
I would say that's wise because, again, these are the kind of maggots that will go into your esophagus and latch on with the little hook mouths and eat your flesh.
Ah, nice.
Apparently, these maggots can jump.
Yeah, that's why they're called cheese skippers because they can jump like 15 centimeters. So if you're eating like a Casu Marzu sandwich, you might want to hold your hand in front of your eyes, for example.
Or just squeeze the bread extra tight. Just grip.
That's the time to switch to a wrap over a sandwich.
But if you don't want to eat the maggots, live maggots, you just put the cheese in a paper bag and close the paper bag tightly.
Yeah.
And eventually as they become oxygen starved, you'll hear kind of like a... as they're like jumping out of the cheese, trying to get out, and they'll pitter-patter in the bottom of the bag. And it's like popcorn. When you hear that sound stop, then it's ready to consume.
Because the maggots are all dead.
All the maggots are dead.
They've all asphyxiated.
I'm horrified. We've dealt with a lot of different things on this. Usually I'm fascinated. I'm horrified.
So Casu Marzu was outlawed for a time. Well, you could always get it in the black market. But
Black market maggot poop.
Black market maggot cheese. Was circumvented by using another European Union regulation and having the Casu Marzu declared traditional food.
Of course.
Yeah. See, now this is one where I can...
So you can't veer from the recipe.
Yeah. Just got to stick with the maggots. Yeah.
This is one that I can understand the evolution of this. You know, like you'd have your cheese
and maggots would accidentally get in,
yeah. And people would go, "We're so hungry. Let's." They would eat it
and be lazy.
Right? And
I could pick all the maggots and maybe, out of the cheese, you know, but I'd rather just
maybe
eat
some people just eat maggots, right? I mean, yeah. it's fleshy and gross. We think it's gross, but then you eat it and you're like, oh, "Bob, this is amazing. You have to try this. This is the best cheese I've ever had."
This okay, is we better have to, than the cheese now, I had
this
before.
This one I can understand, unlike the shark.
Yes.
Because the shark is just, it blows my mind that you could that even bother.
That even bothers, go through all the time and energy.
Yeah.
You know what? This is one of those ones. I might actually eat it.
When you're in Sardinia, you got
to
try the cat.
I don't think that I would be able to be the one who would hold the paper bag until the maggots all suffocated to death and then pull the cheese out and eat it. But if somebody did that for me, right? If somebody
Would you eat it with the live maggots in it, or you prefer the dead?
No way in hell.
No.
Absolutely no way.
Because they can live inside you?
Yeah.
No.
You can pass live or dead maggots after Kasumatsu.
No,
there's no way.
I pass on passing the maggots.
Yeah, no way in heck I'm eating a live maggot.
You guys like coffee? You guys both drink coffee?
I do not drink coffee. Stunts my growth. I'm going to make 6 feet yet.
Don't you drink coffee?
You know, I started off as a not coffee drinker, and now being around my wife, who is, her online nickname is Contains Caffeine.
That's true.
I will now occasionally have a coffee. I do like, you know, iced cappuccinos, stuff like that.
How much would you pay for a bag
of
coffee?
I know what you're going to talk about.
I know where this is going.
Go ahead, though.
I know where this is going.
The most expensive coffee in the world is Kopi Luwak. It's about $90 for a bag.
Bag of coffee. Yeah. Bag of beans.
Because they've been processed.
Through
the palm civet, which is not really a cat, but it's cat-like.
It's in the cat family.
It's a tree-dwelling critter in Indonesia. So these cats, which are nocturnal, will eat the coffee beans, basically pass them through their system.
They won't digest them.
They won't digest them. So then the workers will come through, find the scat, as it's called.
The cat scat.
The civet cat scat. And wash them off, we would hope.
One would hope, although maybe they let them stew for a while. Maybe it's part of the process.
Yeah, because, I mean, normal coffee, they're like the seeds inside of like a kind of a berry, right?
Yeah.
So the civet eats the fleshy pulp of the berry. Passes the beans, as I said.
And somehow in the process of digesting this, it adds extra flavor?
Coffee critic Chris Rubin has said the aroma is rich and strong and the coffee is incredibly full-bodied. Almost. I'll read this like Ricardo Montalban. The aroma is rich and strong, incredibly full-bodied, almost syrupy. It's thick with a hint of chocolate and lingers on the tongue with a long, clean aftertaste.
Yeah,
wow, you should do ads for this kind of coffee.
What I've heard is this process removes the bitterness out of the coffee.
Yes,
so you get
exactly.
a very non-bitter coffee. Yeah.
That Ricardo Montalban reading made me want to try this coffee.
It's good to the last poop.
But surely a scientist can figure out what is happening
and do it
to
chemically.
The bean. Yeah,
do it.
Please do
lab.
It chemically.
Yeah. Oh, why bother?
You got the cats doing all the work for you.
Because the reason I'm only a moderate coffee drinker is because of the bitterness. If you can make a non-shit, less bitter coffee,
right.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But I'm not paying $90 for a bag.
Your $90 also gets you an information brochure and a Lucite paperweight from animalcoffee.com.
A Lucite paperweight. How did they decide?
Got a little picture of a civet on it.
Why not a mug? Why not something that would be coffee-related? Why a paperweight to go along with your $90 bag coffee?
You should write a letter.
Dear poop coffee purveyors. Okay. I think your cross-marketing campaign is ill-advised.
I think I found my anniversary gift for my wife.
Lucite paperweight.
Okay, edit that out. She can't know. It's got to be a surprise.
Our fan, Matt K., longtime listener, he's actually submitted a few suggestions for topics.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan. Introduced me to this food called Ambalopulia.
Well, that's a mouthful. It's, maybe in more ways than one.
You know Cyprus in the Mediterranean?
Cypriots live there. Mm-hmm.
Indeed they do. And in a Cypriot restaurant, you will not find Ambalopulia because it's illegal.
Oh, but what is it?
It is pickled or boiled songbirds.
Like canaries?
Various songbirds.
Okay.
Could be anything, really. You know, they trap them basically by putting a thin net in the trees and also putting glue sticks on trees.
Oh, like fly paper?
Like fly papers.
Songbirds?
For songbirds, the songbird will land on the...
Bird paper?
They'll land on the branch. They won't be able to get off until the people who are the Ambalopuliarians come along with their toothpicks and stab them in the neck.
Is that true? Is that how they kill them?
That is how they do it. That's one of the two methods. Also, the nets will also
And
work.
Then they strip them of their feathers and then pickle them. Do they pickle them whole or do they clean them? Like, do they take all the insides out?
Good question.
Because I'll tell you, soft-shell crab eat the whole thing. Everything included.
Really?
Down in Louisiana, you get your blue crab, your soft-shell crab.
Answer. Since the entrails of the birds are not removed, as it is not cost-effective to do so, it is, after all, only $4 for Amapulia.
But I thought it was illegal.
The consumer is encouraged to swallow the bird whole.
Apparently the enforcement of the ban has been lax, so are restaurants who sell it get in trouble.
There you go.
It's kind of like weed up here in Vancouver.
So is
And you will get like internationally protected species of migratory birds in the batch.
Yeah, it's like catching dolphins in those in those drag nets behind those Japanese trawlers. Just to finish off my soft-shell crab moment, they do the exact same thing. They don't clean them. They just deep fry them or bake them or however you want them cooked, and you just eat the whole thing in one fell swoop.
Often, the legs of the birds are so stuck to the glue sticks that they need to be pulled off the legs.
Dough.
Like pulled off the bird, not pulled off the glue sticks.
Yeah. Okay. Imagine coming to the forest after that happened. You just have this tree with all these like disembodied legs.
Oh, God.
Little bird legs. Mommy, are those leaves on the trees? No. No, Billy, they're not.
So Matt says, I have a half-Cypriot buddy who got married in Nicosia, don't know where that is, and was given an Amapulia as a wedding gift by a very old family friend. He said it's considered a great honor to receive a cruelty pie, so he kind of had to bow and scrape about it, but having it at all actually could have got him in reasonably serious trouble because he's a member of the military of a European Union country.
A cruelty pie? Is that cruelty what they
call
it?
That's what he wrote.
Do you think that the locals actually call it a cruelty pie, or was that just his take on it?
I'm not sure.
This is one that, if it wasn't illegal, I would probably try.
Probably tastes like chicken.
I thought that the eating of the innards would scare me away, but I've done it with soft shell crab, and I didn't really feel any negative effect, so probably down with it.
You guys want to talk about bird's nest soup?
I've been looking at the show notes about this. I didn't know anything about this. I thought bird's nest soup was just a term for a soup that was somehow similar to a bird's nest.
Yeah, I think in some restaurants you can probably get those kind of noodle
those crusty bowls chow mein
that look kind of like bird's nest.
Yeah,
but there is an actual soup made out of bird's nest, which has this kind of gelatinous texture.
Tell us about this, Torn.
The birds live in caves in Borneo. They make their nests in the cave out of saliva. They have a very special saliva. They just go bleh, 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 on the sides of the cave in, layers back and forth like a spider build a web or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Right? Much like a spider.
And it hardens as it goes. Or probably more like how a wasp builds its nest with mud.
Right.
Just layer. Like,
yeah.
So over time, it gets this whole structure made out of its own saliva.
Bird's nest soup
and
farmers.
And so people go into the caves, take the nests, and boil them in a soup. And really disgusting soup.
And they dissolve, and it's bird spit and guano. Actually, guano's bats, isn't it? Bird spit and duty.
Yeah, I don't know if how the cleaning process goes. But so it's made by soaking and steaming the nests in water. It's mostly the market is basically Hong Kong, mostly.
Right, yeah, of course.
And
mainland China.
Mainland China, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like all traditional medicines, it cures everything.
Right, yeah. It's good for what ails you.
Especially like aphrodisiac and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a boner nest.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a boner nest.
So interestingly enough, because the economy has gotten better in China, more people can afford these kind of luxury items.
Mm-hmm.
They basically started making habitats for these birds.
To create, like, bird nest farms.
They make reinforced concrete structures along the coast in Southeast Asia.
So easier to retrieve the nests.
Yeah, so they don't have to get them all the way from Borneo.
Like fish farming, except bird nest farming.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen is you're going to have, then you're going to create a secondary market where you're going to have those, these are farm bird nests. These are the natural, these are organic bird nest soup.
I want free-range bird's nest soup.
Exactly.
How much for a bowl of bird's nest soup?
$20
in Hong Kong.
$20 US.
$30 to $100 US.
Wow.
$30 to $100.
Yeah.
So that's quite a range, like
because there's actually different kinds of nests. There's like white nests and red nests and that sort of thing. I don't know if they're like different species of birds or just different varieties or whatever.
Okay.
The red nests called red blood nests, and they can a kilogram of white nest $2,000, red blood nest $10,000. U.S. dollars for a kilogram of White Nest.
Wow.
Then there's the makers of the White Nest who just put
How much does a kilogram of cocaine go for these days?
Red food coloring into their nest to make it seem. But, of course, there are ways to
figure out what is genuine.
Yeah.
Now I want to create a bird's nest farm.
Yeah, absolutely.
We 10 need a bunch grand of
those,
a kilo.
You need a bunch of those birds. The problem is this is in China. I'm not sure if you started these birds over here that you would get the kind of market for it that you get over there.
Yeah, but
I'm
for 10 grand a kilo, I can ship it. Oh no, I'm paying $50 a kilo to ship it to China. Oh,
that's outrageous.
My profit margin. Ah. I really like what the Maasai have as one of their delicacies, which is the blood and milk mixture that they do during their ceremonial rites.
I saw that on Survivor Africa.
I saw it on Bizarre Foods with some guy.
And this is one of the foods that we've talked about so far that I think I totally would do.
Oh, there's no way I'm doing this.
Really? What they do, for anybody who doesn't know, is they shoot an arrow at close range.
Yeah, basically point blank range. Like I saw this happen. It's like a few inches away from the jugular of the cow.
And they hit the jugular vein of the cow, and then they draw the blood into a skin gourd. And
well, it just pours out at first.
Right, yeah. But they put a skin gourd there to catch this stream of blood, and then they take that and they mix in the milk from the cow, although that could be a bull, but, you know, from a cow, mix it together, and then drink that. They do patch up the animal, though.
It doesn't kill the animal.
They don't kill it.
They take very good care of the cow to make sure that in another month or so they can do this again.
I think I saw this on The Amazing Race as well.
This is a pretty famous thing. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people know about it.
This is the Maasai in Africa.
The Maasai in East Africa.
I would do it. I mean, it's like steak milk.
Yeah.
I like milk and I like steak, so I would have some steak milk.
And around the edges, like at the bottom, it starts to coagulate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you get this kind of
it turns into kind
chewy
of bubble tea.
Kind of thing. Exactly. And they still give it to the kids as like a bit of a candy treat at the end.
Oh, that's right. I remembered
seeing
that,
It's like the prize
too.
At the bottom of the Cracker Jack box.
Bloodle tea.
Delicious.
No. This is kind of similar to just eating your own scabs. That'd give you an idea what
it
is. But
it'd be like
thing.
A fresh scab, though, right? You know, fresh and have a little bit of milk in there curdled up, so it'd be like cheesy scabby.
Or like a beefy scab.
Oh,
you know, maybe I'll, next time I get a steak, I'll just squeeze it really hard and then into a glass of milk and I'll get an idea what this is like.
You say that as a joke. I'm really tempted to do it.
Don't, but I should point this out,
don't
though.
Don't tell me you're a heathen who gets a well-done steak.
No.
Okay. When you
no,
get a like steak, you're plate. Not you're the red stuff is not blood. It's just the cellular walls that are broken down.
I like blood on my plate as much as the next guy, but I ain't like sipping it out of it like a soup bowl.
But don't you sop it up with a piece of bread or something? Like
when you lick when you get a cut in your finger, whatever, you lick it, you can taste the iron in the
yes,
right.
Uh-huh. That's not the taste you have when you eat a steak.
Oh, okay.
Blood is different than a rare steak.
Okay.
FYI.
All right, now I got to get me some blood. What do butchers do with the blood from here? Like, do they just hang them and let it?
That's a good question. Maybe it goes into dog food or something. I have no idea.
Yeah, we need to find that out because that's
readers, email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com. Tell us what you do with your blood.
Perhaps it goes into a drain in the floor.
That's so wasteful.
Blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread makes you live so long you wish you were dead. You add some yogurt and you'll be well fed with blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread.
My grandpa's older than the old gray mare. He sits a-rockin' in his rocking chair. But now he's got a smile that he can't lose. And grandma's sitting knitting baby's shoes.
From eatin' blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread makes you live so long you wish you were dead. You add some yogurt and you'll be well fed with blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread.
I gave up cherry pie and T-bone steak, chicken fricassee and ice cream cake. I don't need vitamins or pills at all. I even mix it with my hat of call.
I'm eating blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread. Makes you live so long you wish you were dead. You add some yogurt and you'll be well fed with blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread.
My nerves were jumpy and I'd walk the floor. I never got to sleep till after four. But since I'm eating right, I feel okay. I'm sleeping every night and half the day from
I'm eating blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread.
From eating
blackstrap so long you wish you were dead.
From eating
you add some yogurt and you'll be well fed.
From eating
blackstrap molasses and the wheat germ bread.
Ink-a-dinka, ink-a-dinka, ink-a-dinka-doo.
Now I was thinner than a pencil line, had no muscles and I had no spine. But now I'm friskier than a pup. All you have to do is prop me up.
Just feed me blackstrap, molasses, and the Wheaton bread. I may say you're less so long you wish you were dead. You add some yogurt and you'll be well fed. Blackstrap, molasses, and the Wheaton bread.
No, a fella who is 92.
Doctors told the guy that he was through.
But now that the doctor has been proven wrong,
he's got more a hop in him than hop along.
From eating blackstrap, molasses, and the weekend bread, makes you live so long you wish you were dead. You add some yogurt and you'll be well fed. With blackstrap, molasses, and the weekend bread.
In the news, popcorn worker's lung.
Oh.
Have you heard about this?
You know what? I heard something about it.
Since 2001, academic studies have been shown links between bronchiolitis obliterans and a chemical used in artificial butter flavor called diacetyl.
So people making microwave popcorn
are constantly exposed to diacetyl. This occurs naturally in milk, cheese, and butter. It gives a kind of buttery taste to foods. But if you heat it, becomes a vapor that can inflame and destroy small airways in the lungs, called bronchioles. So this has turned up in workers at microwave popcorn factories, and disease basically destroys the lungs. Transplant is the only cure. One person's died.
Lung transplant, that sounds like a bad kind of transplant.
It's a serious,
sounds very
serious
big
business.
Yeah. You might have a scar after that.
No federal laws regulate the chemical's use.
Well, I can't imagine. Nobody thought butter flavoring could kill you.
Surely the market will fix itself.
And even people who don't work in popcorn factories but eat more than a couple bags a day. I don't know any of these people.
I'm warning my wife.
Okay. She may get bronchiolitis obliterans.
From eating more than a couple of bags of microwave popcorn a day.
The most recent lawsuit comes from a woman in Queens targeting ConAgra, the large food manufacturer. She claims she ate the popcorn twice daily for the past 16 years and now has an irreversible lung disease.
Twice daily for 16 years. I love popcorn, but I can't even imagine eating a microwave bag of popcorn twice a day for 16 years. That is a very specific palate.
Sometimes I question your commitment to microwave popcorn.
As well you should. I've shown no commitment whatsoever to microwave popcorn.
You're with us on microwave popcorn or you're against us.
What do you got for news, Joe?
I got an outrageous claim about food by an Indian yogi.
Yogi.
Yogi. Hey, boo-boo. There's nothing in my picnic basket.
What was it? So he's not eating?
He claims to be not eating. And of course, much of the news has picked this up as truth. He's an 83-year-old Indian holy man who says he has spent 7 decades without food or water.
That's impossible.
That's exactly.
Unless he's magic.
A team of military doctors, Indian military doctors, have apparently been studying him in a 2-week observation period.
They've been probing him?
I guess so.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. During the period, he neither ate nor drank and did not go to the toilet.
During how long of a period?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks of study.
Now, here's the thing. You can't go without water that long.
For like 3 days.
3 or 4 days, yeah. Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. He was allowed to go outside. He was allowed to leave every once in a while. And they didn't follow him.
In order for this to be a really controlled...
Licking the lichen off the side of the building, I bet.
Dude's just, drinking out of a puddle.
Yeah.
Now, it's still amazing. I mean, he probably didn't eat during that entire period. If he didn't go to the bathroom much
you can apparently not eat for about 3 weeks.
Right.
Before your body starts to eat itself.
And as an Indian, quote-unquote, holy man, a guy who does yoga and probably fasts a lot of the time, he'd be very used to not eating for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But he can't do it without water. You just can't. Now, the thing is, the Indian military is studying this in order to try to figure out ways to not have to feed their army when they fight in extended combat.
Oh, I see.
But he
just
claims
take these yogi pills.
That the secret of this is to be nonviolent. So the kind of, even if his magic is true, it's not going to work for your military.
You cannot do it when you hold a gun.
It's going to be more men who stare at goats. You're going to make a bunch of hippie soldiers, which the world could need more of.
In Canada, big story from about a year and a half ago, Maple Leaf Foods, massive listeriosis, a tainted food debacle, the hundreds of thousands of pounds of meat recalled.
I'm just thinking of the cows and the pigs.
That they gave
those
their lives
guys,
up for nothing.
Well, I'm sure something ate them eventually. Listeriosis or no.
Yeah, listeriosis proof vultures or
fed the crows.
Vermin. Just,
well, Listeriosis ate them.
There you go.
It's a bacteria. Nom nom.
That whole thing, when they put in all the papers, they had these full-page ads pointing out which meat suppliers were actually supplied by Maple Leaf Foods, so avoid all these. Even Maple Leaf's competitors bought their meat from Maple Leaf, which I thought very curious. You know, they had such a big overhead operation that it was more economical for other meat-providing companies to buy their meat from Maple Leaf and resell it.
Are you saying that Coke and Pepsi comes from the same vat?
I wouldn't.
No, but probably the same bottler or similar bottler.
You pretty much couldn't buy any meat in Canada for a while without being fearful of your life.
Too bad. As a 90% vegetarian, I say, too bad.
90% vegetarian. What's the other 10%?
Oh, meat, sir. Meat.
But do you corner one type of meat or another?
Not fish.
Anything but fish.
Mm-hmm. You don't even like tuna? Tuna's like one of the only fish.
It's not that I don't like it. It's like that I won't eat it. KFC Double Down Sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
This has been in the news recently.
I haven't had one, but I'm really curious about it.
You know that it features two thick and juicy boneless white mean chicken fillets?
With a piece of cheese and two pieces of bacon in between?
Sir, two pieces.
Two pieces
of cheese? Two slices of Monterey Jack and pepper jack cheese and Colonel sauce. This product is so meaty, there's no room for a bun.
I think I read an article that, ironically, this Double Down sandwich actually is less caloric intake. If you get the grilled version, then like a piece of their deep-fried sandwich.
Their deep-fried sandwich. Okay, yeah. Fair comparison.
Yeah. No, but with the one with
the bun.
You're
still eating 1,380 calories, though.
Hey, that's not quite an entire day's calories for a grown man.
1,800 is pretty much the recommended.
Two bags of popcorn and one Double Down sandwich, same diff, right?
I like this trend towards, I dare you to eat this shit.
Yeah.
And pay us $6.
Yeah, and it seems to be spearheaded by KFC.
No, that should be the new ad campaign. Forget this, there's no room for the bun. I dare you to eat this shit. That should be the next ad campaign.
It reminds me of something I saw on thisiswhyyourfat.com.
Great site.
Oh.
Pizza Hut Crown Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about this?
No.
The Pizza Hut Supreme Pizza with meatballs and cream cheese balls baked into the crust and shaped like a crown.
So it's around the
pizza
edge?
Pizza for the kings.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice.
In like, boop, 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 boop.
There was a Burger King sandwich that came a little while ago, the barbecue steakhouse with like a blooming onion on it and all the rest of that stuff. Like they deep fried onions, one of those onion, blooming onion things, put it on a sandwich, put like two patties on it, like four slices of cheese, barbecue sauce, and it became the highest caloric intake of any fast food sandwich ever devised. 2,400 calories or something ridiculous.
A couple other hilarious things I want to read off from thisiswhyyourfat.com. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the sweaty cowboy is?
No.
Take a guess. Take a guess.
I think I've heard of this.
The sweaty cowboy.
I think I did that once. And I never want to do it again.
She punched you, didn't she?
Fried Spam, peanut butter, bacon and cheddar cheese inside a sliced Twinkie.
Spam?
Fried Spam.
Well, I'm just going to go with the ingredients.
Sure.
Spam. Cream cheese.
No, peanut butter.
Peanut butter, sorry.
Cheddar cheese.
Cheddar cheese and a Twinkie.
Bacon. Inside a sliced Twinkie.
Who thought this was a good idea?
The sweaty cowboy.
Now, do they scoop out the Twinkie stuff in the middle? Is that...
Good question. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
I don't. You know what? With all those other things, I don't think they do. I don't think you take the time and attention
to take it says inside a sliced Twinkie, right?
Yeah.
So it's got the cavity for the cream filling. So I'm guessing that they scoop out the cream filling and they put the Spam, peanut butter, bacon, and cheddar cheese inside that...
Yeah,
and then you got a fingerful of the Twinkie filling that you just kind of wipe on the top,
or you lick it.
Or then you put that. Yeah.
I'll tell you the one thing that doesn't fly for me: the sweet and savory thing. I don't get it.
We could just go through thisiswhyyourfat.com for this entire segment.
Well, we'll just make a link.
Yeah, we
so
absolutely
visit
will.
Us at causticsodapodcast.com, and then you can press a button that will take you.
That's right.
To thisiswhyyourfat.com,
where you can see the Napoleon Dynamite.
Also in the news, cooking oil made from sewage. A tenth of all cooking oil used in China may be made from recycled sewage and laced with toxic contaminants.
Here's what I don't know. Why are the Chinese trying to poison everybody? There's got to be an easier
way. It's half the price to make oil from sewage in the regular way.
Yeah, but I mean, you probably make oil out of water. No, you can't do that.
You're drunk, sir. Recycled from raw sewage taken from sewers and elsewhere, heated and filtered. After filtration, the liquid is transparent and free of particulate matter and can be rendered into cooking oil.
Oh.
Significant levels of aflatoxins, don't know what that word is, has been detected.
It ends in toxin, though.
But, yeah, and it's known to cause growth defects in children and cancer.
So don't buy cooking oil that says made in China.
Well, here's the thing. Usage thought to be widespread, as the recycled cooking oil is all but indistinguishable from normal cooking oil, except that it's half the price. And estimates are that it constitutes a tenth of all cooking oil used in China. So nations importing cheap cooked foodstuffs from China may be concerned that they've been inadvertently poisoning their children by trading with a nation in which regulation and business ethics are all but unknown.
I think that's an understatement.
Oh, not God. To diss China or anything.
Well, the, you know, lead toys,
let me put it away. Let me put this another
food.
Way. Not to diss the Chinese.
Sewage cooking oil.
I'll diss China, but not the Chinese.
Oh, okay. You're caught on your...
Choking on my own rage here.
Okay. I've got an anecdote.
Bring it.
The beginning of the anecdote, not so interesting. I had a bad omelet one time. Haven't had an egg since February 26th of 2007.
What? Why was it bad? Well, what was the effect that made you give up eggs?
I can actually go a little bit further back. I was.
Is it because you saw one come out of a chicken's bum?
No, I was dating. I was dating this girl.
A chicken.
No, this isn't the chicken lady story from the Kids in the Hall. Her ex-boyfriend was the cook on this show that I was working on, and the very first day of filming, the very first meal, I had an omelet, which made me ill. Coincidence? Hmm. Perhaps not.
I think you might have been poisoned.
I suspect that it is.
Were you the only one who was poisoned?
Yeah, no one else in the crew got sick. About 6 hours after eating the omelet, I began to feel nauseous, to say the least. Yeah, I had to race home and spent the next 12 to 24 hours vomiting and pooping.
So why would that put you off of eggs and not off the chef?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things. It's a completely mental thing because I just think about eating an egg and I go, I feel off. I don't feel right about it. Here's the curious thing. Like if it's just in something, like you know how when somebody cooks a hamburger, usually they roll it in like an egg wash or whatever to keep it stuck together. That doesn't bother me. It's just like a whole egg because I fully admit
it's mental.
Entirely mental.
Oh, yeah. I've had that from vodka after my 31st birthday. If I smelled vodka, I would get ill. But like after that, it was just like, ugh. I've since recovered, thankfully.
Torn, any bad eating experiences that have turned you off a particular food?
Nah.
My uncle Bert.
You ate your uncle Bert?
That's a cannibalism episode.
Put you off of Uncle Bert's?
He's an eater. He, as a young man, went to fry himself an egg. Cracked the egg, and it had been one of those ones that had gotten past quality control even after being fertilized.
Right, yes.
So he actually cracked a little baby bird.
That's
into
happened
his
to me a few times
because
I used to live in Chilliwack. There's a lot of chicken farms around, and you would actually go and grab and get like a dozen eggs for like a quarter or whatever, and, like next door basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you would
every once in a while
there'd be a little
get an actual little baby chick. Mm-hmm. Well, this was enough to turn my uncle off of eggs for good as well, which I thought at the time when he told me that he hadn't eaten an egg in like 30, 40 years, I thought was crazy. But But now I don't eat eggs either. So it runs in the family.
It's just more room for bacon on your plate.
A little family tradition. Yeah, I'm a sausage guy.
Oh, yeah. I believe it.
Yeah. It's pretty obvious from looking
at
it.
Oh, man. I opened myself up a little bit too wide there.
That's what she said.
Chilled monkey brains.
Is this true or is this a myth? Indiana Jones moment where they're all eating monkey brains and all that.
In the Temple of Doom?
Yeah, exactly. Now, is this a myth or is this reality? Does this happen?
Reality.
The practice of eating monkey brains has led to overhunting in Indonesia, especially due to the unfounded belief that eating the monkey's brains can cure impotence.
Boner brains.
Boner brains.
Yeah, you want to get anybody to eat anything disgusting, just tell them, oh, come on, man, it'll give you a hard-on.
Related, the Anyang tribe... which are in Nigeria, in Cameroon. They had a tradition where the new tribal chief would consume the brain of a hunted gorilla while another senior member of the tribe would eat the heart.
To get the power of the gorilla kind of thing.
Yeah, so they're only allowed to hunt gorillas for the initiation of a new chief. So the gorilla is killed, eats the brain, and anyone who hunted gorillas on other occasions was sentenced to death.
Because they're rare and majestic.
In the 1960s, the chiefs and the traditional structure was still strong, and this taboo was observed. However, now rich businessmen are held in more esteem than the traditional chiefs, and the taboo is no longer observed. With money, they can obtain whatever they want.
And gorilla brains is what they all want. The most dangerous prey. I saw a video once. I think it was in Singapore or one of those Asian city states or whatnot, and they were eating live scorpions.
Live?
Mm-hmm. Had a bowl of live scorpions, but they were baby scorpions. So their shell hadn't hardened. And their stinger didn't have any poison yet.
Okay.
And they were very tiny scorpions. Like probably they could fit in the palm of your hand, maybe even smaller. Well, a couple of them in the palm of your hand. And they had a giant bowl of them. They were crawling around.
So were they transparent? Because I know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they were transparent. They were You could see right through them.
Right.
Or I guess they were translucent. They weren't entirely transparent.
They weren't invisible.
They weren't invisible. And they would pick them up with chopsticks, pop them in their mouth, and you'd see the little baby stingers. They'd try and sting them, but their stingers weren't hard enough to break the human skin.
Oh, because, yeah, I know that they're born venomous, scorpions. Maybe not all of them, but I remember hearing or reading or seeing that.
I watched a video of a table full of Asian gentlemen eating live scorpions, and they'd have them halfway in their mouth, and the little stinger would be stinging them on the face. But that's the sound of a baby scorpion. Yeah. evidently a delicacy. I don't know. I don't get it.
It's because you never had it.
That's
probably. Try the scorpion. So we did Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Some other movies, food movies, might be Soylent Green.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, didn't we talk about Soylent Green on another episode?
Was it cannibalism?
Might have been.
Had to be.
Supersize Me.
Supersize Me and Food Incorporated are two other sort of documentaries on food.
I've been told by numerous people that if I were to watch Food Inc., it would cure me of being a meat eater.
I watched Food Inc. Mm-hmm. I'm still 90% vegetarian.
Oh, so it didn't push you the extra 10%. Were you 90% vegetarian before you watched it?
Yeah, more or less.
Maybe if you were 75, I can't risk that 15%.
No, I would have been 85% before, if anything.
Push you to 90, that's enough for me.
That's 5%.
If I eat 5% more non-meat product, that's too much. I'm frightened of Food Inc. That'll push me over the edge. I can't risk it.
Yeah, so Food Inc. Examines corporate farming in the United States and concludes that the meat and vegetables produced by agribusiness have many hidden costs and are unhealthy and environmentally harmful.
Yeah, being a person is environmentally unfriendly.
That is very true.
So, you know.
I can't risk it for a brisket.
The thing we got to do is have less people.
Jokes that rhyme are better, Tom. Stop shaking your head at me.
I agree with Joe.
If we can cut our world population in half by just having less babies, then we could be twice as wasteful.
Awesome.
Think about it.
I remember.
Where do you put all the babies?
This is not food related, but I remember there being a competition in a newspaper for who do you know who's the most eco-friendly person.
Uh-huh.
Like, who's the best on the environment?
Yeah.
And my thoughts immediately went to, like, mass murderers.
Ah, because they trim the population. Yeah, absolutely.
I decided not to write in and
and pose
and
that.
And put that.
Yeah, posit that theory.
It's like,
eating competitions, does that count as a pop culture thing? Because it's actually the Nathan's Hot Dog annual hot dog eating competition is now telecast on television.
On ESPN.
On ESPN, no less. Yeah. Of course, the big story last year was they had to, for one of the very first times, have an playoff eat-off, because in the regular, you get 12 minutes to eat as many hot dogs as you can.
This is Coney Island.
There's an Asian fella who's been dominant on the competitive eating scene for quite some time.
Is that, what's his name, Meatballs? Or no, that's,
I was going to say Konishiki, but he's the sumo wrestler. He was the world dumpling eating champion before he came over to America to dominate North American eating competitions. And he pioneered the dunking the hot dog bun in the water and swallowing the bun whole as a way to speed up. Because if you don't eat the bun, the hot dog doesn't count. So he separated the buns and the hot dogs, ate a bunch of hot dogs. He's the one who pioneered that, revolutionized the sport, if you can call it a sport.
I do.
I don't.
And
furthermore, I will go ahead and say that they are athletes.
They are athletes, absolutely. He was also the one who came up with the theory that thinner guys can eat more because they don't have the fat girdle keeping their stomach from expanding.
Exactly. I've heard that as well. Because you watch these competitions and there's no fat guys.
Yeah, not anymore. Up till like 2 years ago, he was the dominant champion. I don't even know how many times in a row he'd won it. And last year, he had an injury. Was it a jaw injury?
Yeah, it was. He said he couldn't open his mouth more than like two fingers.
So,
or something like that.
So 2 years ago, he took the competition off. And a young whippersnapper, an American named
Joey Chestnut,
blew the competition away. This past year, they were the two titans of the sport, went head-to-head. It's like Gretzky and Lemieux over again, mouth-to-mouth, in a purely non-sexual way.
Competitive eaters are called gurgitators.
I hadn't heard that term, but it makes perfect sense.
Kind of the opposite of regurgitating, which
they do after the competition is over.
Right. Yeah, no, but not on the stage, otherwise you lose.
Yeah.
And they actually ate to a tie in the 12-minute span and had to have an eat-off, in which case it was they took a number of hot dogs, and whoever could finish those hot dogs, I think it was like another 5 hot dogs or something, and whoever finished them first would win. And Joey Chestnut edged out our Asian friend by like a third of a hot dog.
Wow.
To take it. It was very dramatic.
Soon to be made into a major motion picture.
Did you know that when you are cramming food in your mouth and it comes out the side of your mouth, side food, they call it?
Sci-fi. Really?
Yeah. 2007, the year 2007, for the first time, were cash prizes awarded to the winners.
Oh, really?
Guess how much 7th place is worth.
We're talking about the Nathan's hot dog eating competition?
Yeah.
$1,000.
$100. Guess how much 1st place is worth.
$1,000?
10 large.
Oh, 10 G's.
That kind of promotes the gastro...
The gurgitation...
Gastrolympics.
The gastro... There, very good.
The gastrolympics.
Did you make that up or did you read that somewhere?
I just made that up.
Nice.
The gastro...
TM.
Patent pending.
Yeah.
No, let's see.
I want to talk about one of the competitive eaters, Sonia, the Black Widow Thomas.
Ooh.
Have you heard about her?
No.
Known as the leader of the four horsemen of the esophagus.
Does everything to do with competitive eating have to be a play on words? Is I that an does. Absolute per-
well,
it's prerequisite?
It starts off as kind of a joke anyway. So.
The 98, she's 98 pounds. She's Korean-born American from Alexandria, Virginia. Here's just a few of her records. 11 pounds of downtown Atlantic cheesecake in 9 minutes.
Doink.
65 hard-boiled eggs in 6 minutes, 40 seconds. 4 pounds, 14 and one quarter ounces of Wegmans fruitcake in 10 minutes. 44 lobsters, totaling 11.3 pounds, in 12 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
43 tacos in 11 minutes.
Did she eat this whole list at the same time? That would be really impressive.
No. How many tater tots in 5 minutes? Kevin.
40,000. Well, they're small. You can eat them whole.
7,000.
Pop them in.
250 tater tots.
Oh, no.
Turducken.
Oh, no.
How many turduckens?
7¾ pounds of turducken in 12 minutes.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. I have a gluttony story.
Is it about turducken?
No.
Is it about my variant of turducken? The kiwi inside the emu inside the ostrich? The
no.
turducken of the flightless bird world?
Where's the penguin in that equation?
There's no room.
No, you could fit a kiwi inside a penguin, couldn't you?
I'll test that. Depends on the kind of penguin, I guess.
Yeah, the
the emperor penguin.
Yeah, the emperor
large.
Penguin. Yeah, no, you could go. It was on one of those video clip shows, you know, where they just show basically YouTube videos and have a deep voiced guy doing voiceover stuff on it. They had this gentleman who was going to break the world record for drinking the most raw eggs in a single sitting and drinking raw eggs.
Wow.
Absolutely,
you would die from the cholesterol.
Spoiler alert: 120. 120 raw eggs he wanted to do. They have this video clip of him, and
paramedics are standing by.
It's a giant jug of raw eggs.
Yeah.
And he starts to chug like this
thing.
Oh, my God! And it's going down pretty slick and easy. He looks like he's made to do this. And he sits there, and he finishes it all, slams it down, raises his arms in victory, and not more than 1 second goes by when he grabs his head between his hands and collapses, smacking his head on the table in front of him and falling off the stage, to which the deep-voiced narrator pointed out that he had a stroke, an instantaneous stroke due to the cholesterol level that he would have by consuming that many eggs.
Thank you, Darwin.
He did succeed in breaking the record. The person,
good for him.
The person whose record he broke was his own record.
Oh.
He was the current world record holder, and the first time he did it,
I can imagine him in the morning looking in the mirror, I'm going to fucking waste you, man.
No, the first time he did it, he had a stroke that time as well. And he took like 6 months in the hospital to recover.
Gotta get back on that horse.
And when he came back out, he said, I'm gonna set the new record. So I think the stroke perhaps damaged his judgment.
Where's my burrito? Where's my burrito? Where's my burrito?
Next time on Caustic Soda.
And if there's a black bean by your house, you died anyways, despite the $1 trillion missile shield.
Yeah.
The resulting debris in orbit would keep us out of space for about the next 25,000 years. Could be cookies, could be a death bean. We didn't ask. They just put the box on the shuttle and told us when to dump it out.